Hello, and welcome to the second episode of Climate Smart Conversations. My name is Catherine Speedy, and I'm a Sustainability Fellow at Health Education and Improvement Wales, and your host for this podcast series. In this second episode, we will be talking more about decarbonisation. In 2019, Welsh Government set a target for Wales's public sector, including the NHS, to be net zero for carbon emissions by 2030. In this episode, we explore what that means and how we can achieve it. There are two guests joining me in this episode. Callum Shaw, Environment Sustainability Improvement Manager at Cardiff and Vale University Health Board, and Aled Guy, Fellow of the Royal Geographical Society and Chartered Geographer. Aled is Head of Sustainability and Net Zero Carbon Management at NHS Wales Shared Services Partnership. Hello both, thank you for joining us today. Hello Aled.
Hello.
And hello Callum.
Hiya.
So I've been really excited to record today. I've been really looking forward to hearing a bit more about decarbonisation and thinking a bit more about sustainability. And so to start off with, I just wanted you both to introduce yourselves. I know you both have sustainability within your job titles. So maybe tell us a bit more about what you did and how you came into those roles. Callum, should we start with you?
Thanks, Catherine, and thanks for having me on the podcast. So I guess sort of growing up, I sort of had a deep interest in the natural world, but I wouldn't necessarily say that I was sort of like an eco-warrior or an advocate for sustainability in my younger years. And I didn't really take the sort of academic route into sustainability either. So what I actually did is I joined the civil service from school. And after dabbling in finance for a little bit, I joined a team which at the time was working on the sponsorship of Environment Agency, Countryside Council of Wales and the Forestry Commission. So that sort of eventually became what we now see as NRW. So that role really allowed me to see what impact we have as a country on our natural environment and how challenging it is really to maintain the green spaces that we have across Wales. And I would say that that's really my first taste of like environmentalism. So from there, I looked to try and involve myself in roles within the civil service that had like a positive impact. And that's one of the things that I've tried to start to take forward as part of every role I've done since. So from that role, I undertook a bit of a stint in a nature-based grant program and then a very short stint within the WFG, the Development of the World and Future Generations Act, before then moving on to the climate change team. It actually took me about 2 years to try and get into that team because at the time it was quite a small but, you know, a really, really good team. I was really interested to try and see how within that area we could, like, you know, it was a very much an emerging theme and a narrative around climate change at the time following the development of the Environment Wales Act. So, and then there's some sort of emission targets set within that as well. So when I joined that team, I got a role which was working on the first low carbon delivery plan for Wales. So I was in that team when Wales declared a climate emergency, which was really exciting. Also being part of that team, I managed to attend COP24 in Poland, which really sort of opened my eyes to a whole another world of climate action, sort of hearing from the like small nations about how climate change was directly impacting on them and seeing some of the like collaboration and actions that were happening sort of across the world, really. Sort of going to things like that really provided me with some hope. There was a lot of things that could be done in order to really take this agenda forward. So after a relatively long stint in that climate change role, I moved to public sector decarbonisation and then worked on the Welsh air quality legislation before moving to Cardiff and Vale. So after sort of developing national policies and working at that sort of government level for so long, moving over to the health board has sort of really opened my eyes on the way that the ground level challenges sort of facing healthcare are, and you know, how we're going to be able to tackle them in the light of the climate emergency. But what I found since sort of getting into this environment is there's a lot of very, very dedicated people who really want to make a difference. So yeah, sorry, that's probably quite lengthy, but
No, that's absolutely perfect. Thank you. Really interesting to listen to. But is it possible just to maybe have 30 seconds on just what your job is?
Yeah. So my current role is the Environmental Sustainability Manager for the Health Board. And what I'm looking to try and do really is set up the framework for the organisation to try and tackle the decarbonisation emission targets, which we have within the organisation.
Thank you. And we're going to come back, talk a bit more about what some of those things are later. But thank you. And thank you again so much for giving up your time to come and speak to us today. And Alid, would you like to maybe introduce yourself to our listeners, please?
Yeah, thanks, Catherine. And thanks for having me onto the podcast. My name's Alid Guy. I'm head of sustainability and net zero carbon management for Shared Services Partnership. I work within procurement, and my interest, I suppose, or where it started for me was, I can picture it now, in year seven in Glantave Comprehensive School. So I'm a Welsh speaker, but that's where it started for me, in a geography lesson in year seven, many moons ago now. And just the topic itself and having a good teacher, I think, helps in a particular subject, certainly when you're of that age. You know, you can be influenced by the teachers around you. And something sort of started the spark for me at that point. So I carried on with geography throughout comprehensive school, and then I studied at Aberystwyth University. I was fortunate to gain a place at Aber, where I studied human geography. For those who don't know, or maybe think, well, what's geography got to do with sustainability and decarbonisation? Lots of different terminology around geography, but essentially it's the study of place and the relationships between people and the environment. So I would consider myself a geographer through and through. Having finished a degree in Aberystwyth, human geography, I tried to sit on the fence as much as I could, actually, between human geography and physical geography, just because of my area of interest. And at the time, I remember writing a dissertation on the environmental and the humanistic impacts of the first wind farm in Wales, which is quite controversial at the time, and what people thought of that, and the not in my backyard effect of things, and how we've moved on from that. So fast forward quite a few years from then, I've worked for one of Wales's largest registered social housing landlords, working with those who are socially and economically inactive, and trying to see how we could get those people back into sustainable employment, and the relationship between sort of their communities where they lived, and how to get the best out of a particular community to really enrich it as well. And then an opportunity came up with the NHS around 18 months ago now. And at the time, retrofitting was being talked about a lot in the housing sector. And I could see there's maybe some more opportunity for me within the NHS to share what I had learnt to date. And I'm still learning as well in the arena of sustainability. I think it's something that we continually learn. Even now, I look at geography as a subject. And when I was studying, there was the option of doing human geography or physical geography. Now you can actually look at environmental geography. So that wasn't sort of around when I was studying. So that's sort of my background and how I came into the NHS. And my role, as I said, sits within procurement. And I think procurement has got a huge part to play in not just decarbonisation, but sustainability and in its broader sense in meeting our needs for the present without jeopardising the needs of those who are to come after us and future generations and those who are yet to be born. So that's kind of where I am and how I got to where I am. I think that answers your question.
It does. Thank you. That answers it really well. And I think it really helps to kind of know who you both are that are talking to us today. And thank you also, Alid, for giving up your time. Diolch. So in our last episode, we heard about what sustainable healthcare is and the four principles of sustainable healthcare. So in this episode, I wanted to really focus on decarbonisation. I think it can be a topic that lots of listeners might not be familiar with, or they might have heard the word and not been quite sure about it. And later in the episode, we're going to come to what needs to be done to achieve the net zero target. But first, I think there's a bit of groundwork to do in terms of even sort of understanding what net zero means and some of these other terms and definitions as well. So I wonder if it might be okay if we maybe spoke a little bit more about that, maybe starting with what is a carbon footprint in the first place? And Alex, can you maybe help us to understand that, please?
Well, I'll try, and I appreciate as well that other people will have a different definition maybe. So I'll try and sum as best I can that everything that we do, all activities that we undertake, even moving from A to B generates a carbon footprint. So it's the consumption of that carbon. And we talk about carbon footprinting as well, but quite often you'll actually see the equation CO2, a little E next to it as well. So the carbon footprint, or the carbon equivalent emissions. So we hear about methane. That's quite a hot topic at the moment, where we see a lot of things in the news around sustainable farming subsidies and strategies and so forth. But a carbon footprint is basically the emissions that we emit from activity and the things that we do in our day-to-day life, the things that we consume as well. So nothing that we do is completely carbon free. You know, even you say walking to the shops might have a zero carbon footprint, but actually, how did you get your energy to move from A to B? You know, we've consumed something, our energy, so there's a carbon footprint to the things, the food that we consume, or the drink, whether that's water, anything that we consume for that matter, will leave a carbon footprint. So we'll try and make that as small and as responsible maybe as we can. You quite often see maybe when you're out in nature, maybe working along the beach or in a forest somewhere, people are trying to see about being responsible around the environment and leave nothing but footprints. But actually, in some cases, we don't even want to leave a carbon footprint where possible. So it's about then how do we decarbonize and take carbon out of the atmosphere?
Thank you. That's really helpful. And I think we mentioned in our last episode about the carbon footprint of NHS Wales being 1 million tonnes of carbon dioxide equivalent. That was in 2018-19. But I think at the time we didn't really sort of expand on that and really think about what a carbon footprint is. So hopefully it's been helpful to come back to that today. And then thinking about this word decarbonisation, and that we've already mentioned quite a few times, Callum, can you maybe tell us a bit more, you know, what do we mean when we say decarbonisation?
Yeah, of course. So I think if I can just firstly sort of continue to sort of touch upon what Ali was saying around a carbon footprint. So I guess to understand the decarbonisation of the NHS or within your daily lives, I guess we've got to understand what our footprint requires. So within the NHS, what we actually mean when we talk about carbon footprint is essentially the heating and powering of our buildings, the business travel and commuting of our staff, the waste which we generate, the goods and services which we buy, and other things such as anaesthetic gases. So Alice just mentioned methane as another sort of F gas, sort of the predominant emissions, other emissions other than carbon, which are produced from those anaesthetic gases. Alice also sort of touched upon this just now, but most of the things which we do or buy or have a carbon footprint or a carbon equivalent, most of those are derived from the burning of fossil fuels. So decarbonisation in its truest sense refers to the process of reducing or eliminating carbon dioxide. So what we want to try and do is, reduce our impact from each of those areas within the NHS and allow staff, patients to try and limit what the impact is on the environment.
Thank you. It's a lot to think about, isn't it? You know, when you just think about how many different things we need to think about and include in these calculations and different factors to look at. But we talk about trying to achieve this net zero for carbon emissions. So what are we trying to do here? What's that target all about?
Okay, so I think the thing for us to understand firstly here is what do we actually mean by net zero? To simplify, net zero basically means that on balance, we try to balance the amount of greenhouse gas that's produced and the amount of greenhouse gases that are removed from the atmosphere as well. And that's basically what we mean by net zero. We don't add any more greenhouse gas equivalents to the atmosphere. So that's essentially what we mean by net zero. I don't know if Callum, you want to give a different sort of definition, but that's sort of my interpretation.
So again, I can probably sort of talk about the truer sense of it. So net zero is about trying to reduce our emissions as much as possible. And then for those emissions which we can't reduce, it's by offsetting. So what I mean by offsetting is by sequestering carbon, so the likes of planting trees, or we can invest in renewable technology which wouldn't be directly linked to our sites. So I'll put that into a little bit more context for you. So if we put solar panels on the roof of our building, that is a direct benefit for the service. So we would actually sort of see those generated. If we were to put solar panels in, in Africa as an example, that potentially could be an offset. So that's what we can try and do. That's what we mean by a net zero.
Callum said the O word then, offset. And it's, to be fair, that's not, I say that tongue in cheek, but if we wanted to be net zero right now, you could argue that we offset all of our carbon footprint to become net zero. And I think we hear the term greenwashing quite often. And this is something that a lot of companies, organizations who are out there may wish to do. So it's a bit of a, we hear about fossil fuel industry talking about becoming net zero. Well, that's never really possible because they work in a fossil fuel industry. The way that they become net zero is by offsetting. So we need to offset, but by doing that responsibly. And that's essentially the last resort of offsetting. So how we get to that point. So before we get to offsetting, we need to reduce our carbon emissions as much as possible before we offset. So at the moment, you think of woodland, ancient woodland, rainforests. We hear about deforestation quite a lot. Trees are essentially the lungs of the earth. And through deforestation, we've restricted the breathing Mother Earth can do at the moment. So we actually need to get back to a point before we can even start offsetting. So that the planting, the tree planting projects that we see that are happening globally at the moment is only sort of restoring up to levels, you know, where we were decades ago, essentially, because of deforestation, so pre-industrial times. So I would use the word offsetting quite cautiously, though I said, you know, it's sort of tongue-in-cheek earlier on. It is something that we will need to do at some point, but that's pretty much sort of a last resort of what we do.
Absolutely. So just trying to reduce the carbon emissions as much as we possibly can, and then hopefully only a very small amount left that is just completely unavoidable, and then that's what we'll then be looking to offset. I think that's really helped me to sort of make sense of it all a little bit more and given me a better understanding. And I think we've already maybe started to think a little bit about what we can do to decarbonize the NHS and to reduce those carbon emissions. So can I ask you both for your thoughts on that? I know it's a really big question, but you know, maybe what's the starting point, or is there anything that would be helpful for people to know? Callum, do you want to start?
Yep, of course. As you mentioned, it is a really big question, and it's something I have thought quite a lot about. But you know, I think the first thing, you know, so a lot of this is possibly not within our control within the NHS. There's a lot of system change which needs to happen, you know, particularly within renewable energy and within the sort of structures of our system, really. But there's a lot of things which we do have control over. The first thing I would say is that we actually need to reduce our demand. So we know that you know, our buildings are not, they're not the most efficient. So we need to look at how we can reduce our energy demand, look how we can reduce our waste, and try and reduce our products and products we use as well. So that's kind of the first step in this, really, is just becoming a bit more efficient. So there's, I guess, there's a couple of different ways around that as well. So we could be looking at reusing products, reducing products, or just coming up with whole new ways. So innovative ways of trying to deliver our services. I'm conscious that I'm not a clinical expert, so I'm only there to support people. But, you know, I think we've got quite a lot of people who are thinking around this space in the clinical environments. What we need to do within the NHS is also start to produce more renewable energy. So we need to try and make our buildings more low carbon. We need all of our staff to make more conscious and considerate efforts to look at more sustainable modes of transport. I've mentioned waste previously, but we need to start disposing of things correctly. And even though that's a really small, it seems like quite a small thing, I don't think it's sort of done consistently, but we need to make sure that where we are disposing of things, we're doing that in the lowest carbon way possible. And the last thing, which is probably not all within our control, but it's we actually just need people to stop getting ill. That is probably the best way in which we can reduce our emissions within the NHS. It's not for people to get ill, so we don't have to then treat them. Because obviously all of our goods and services, all the products which we're using, is a direct result of people getting ill. So like the prevention agenda is going to be sort of critically important to delivering on our net zero agenda.
Yes, and I think that was one of the things I really took from the last episode that we recorded, was that need for prevention and that leading reduction in the demand on services. Ali, did you want to add any thoughts on how we can go about decarbonising the NHS and achieving this net zero target?
Yeah, sure. So essentially, we need to understand where we were, where we are right now, in order to understand what we can do and where we can go from this point. So Callum referenced scope 1, 2 and 3 emissions just then. So the scope 1 are basically the direct emissions that we own and we control within the NHS. Scope 2 and scope 3 are those indirect emissions then that we, as a consequence of the activities that that we undertake. So if we look at energy, for example, we're always going to need energy within the NHS. So making sure that that's from a green or a renewable source. That's something that we're working on in procurement and making sure that we can get the best energy possible. And by that, I mean sort of a renewable source. We are transitioning from fossil fuel. We're trying to make a net zero commitment as far as the energy that we purchase and buying into the future as well, that making sure that we've got resilient supply chains. That's been well documented in the press recently about the problems that we have around supply chains and global supply chains with things that are happening in other parts of the world at the moment. So controlling sort of those things that we can, but when we look at energy, so making sure that we buy zero carbon energy and buy zero carbon, you know, it's a really complex landscape. So understanding things like, well, where does nuclear fit into this? Recognizing that the patient care is at the forefront of what we do, to try and get the biggest bang and the best buck for our pound here, nuclear is sort of a transitional option for us. It's zero carbon at the point of creation. However, we do know that the mining of uranium is very harmful, not to mention the byproduct of the nuclear industry and the waste that generates through decommissioning and decontamination. Lots of work going into that. So the energy that we consume within the NHS is a big area where we can control where we buy the energy from, but we can't control how much we use, because we've got an aging population, a growing population for that matter as well, knowing that in future that we're going to have more treatment, more pressure on the NHS as we grow as well, it's only going to show that the demand for our services is going to increase. So as Callum mentioned then, and 100% spot on in saying prevention better than cure. So how do we help people? How do we work collectively and together to improve population health? And that's wider than just one department. You know, that's broad, you know, and that's a collective effort between sort of the clinicians, those who are supporting clinicians, those who work in procurement, those who may work in the States, Public Health Wales, HIW, all of those together. So it's that collective effort and that societal effort as well. And that's where, you know, the kind of the links for me in geography and sort of where I start to really think, okay, what's the broader picture here and under the broader umbrella of sustainability. Decarb is just one area that sits under that. So then when we start looking at the scope 2 and moving towards scope 3, those things may be that we can't directly control. So if we look at procurement, working with our supply chain, anywhere between 16,000 to 19,000 suppliers, the question is, well, how can we buy more sustainably? How can we ask our supply chain to make sure that they're net zero commitments align with ours as well. So we can write that into policy, asking about carbon reduction plans. That's a huge way we can start reducing and making an impact on scope 3 emissions by asking our suppliers to reduce their carbon footprint. We know if you look at, I think if you picture it, that mental image of the pie chart of where the emissions come from in the NHS in Wales, procurement being a huge part of that. But we've got to ask, well, what do we buy? In the first instance, do we need to buy it? It's amazing the amount of stuff. And I think of furniture as a office equipment as an example that I work in the Heath, and I've seen sort of the amount of office equipment that I've seen either coming into a building or exiting. Why do we need all of this stuff? You know, there's mountains of it in different places that are being moved around. If we can just start sharing, utilizing all these things and stopping things being wasted in the first place. So it's about reducing that consumption. And that's just an example, one example of many. But if you start looking at the waste that's generated generally in the NHS, not necessarily from one department or a different department, and there's lots of reasons behind that as well, but actually just trying to cut down on consumption and cut down on the waste, we really need to start embedding then those principles of circular economy into day-to-day practice in what we do. So I think that's probably a key area for me, is embedding those circular economy principles, as Callum alluded to earlier as well.
Thank you. There's going to be an upcoming episode of All About Waste, which again is a huge topic. To limit it just to one episode is going to be a challenge, and we may be a topic that again I come back to in later episodes. Thank you, that was really helpful. And for listeners who want to find out more, then we'll include a link to the decarbonisation strategy for NHS Wales in the episode notes. I wondered if you could give us an example of a project that you've been involved in and what difference that made. Maybe just a short project, but just a really sort of tangible example for listeners of a project that led to a reduction in carbon emissions.
Callum, do you want to go first on this one? I've got a couple I can think of.
That's my problem as well, as I got too many. I'm happy to go first. So yeah, I've been within my role, sort of it's quite a centrally focused position, so I sort of come across quite a lot of initiatives. So you know, a lot of stuff is happening across across Cardiff and Vale, but also across the wider NHS, which is sort of really, really good to see. And mostly I play a very, very small part in these projects. So I'm going to cheat a little bit and have a couple of initiatives. But what we try to do within Cardiff and Vale is we try to share our stories. So we have a green group, and Catherine, I know you've been on one of our episodes and in one of our green groups, but we just think it's a really good way to try and share those initiatives. So I think that's really, really important, that when you have some good news stories, it's try and cascade that around the organisation and as far wide as possible. So like I mentioned, I've got a few here really. So we've got a therapies and physio team who have got a sustainability lead and some very sort of dedicated people. They've been looking at a walking aid recycling program, which I think is has made like an absolutely massive difference within the organization. They've saved thousands of pounds, but they've also set up an amnesty to try and limit the amount of walking aids going into landfill and recycling them and using them for other patients. But the one thing that they have done around that program as well is they've created social value. So they've been working with the probation service to get people who are on probation to come in and clean and remanufacture the products, which is providing skills and work for them outside. And I just thought that was one program which I really sort of wanted to bring to the forefront. Two of the other areas which are sort of really leading the way within our health board really are the emergency department, where they're looking at the green ED framework, and they're sort of really working as hard as they can to try and encapsulate all of the projects and initiatives which are sitting within there. And the other one I just wanted to quickly mention was the critical care team. So they're a great team who are sort of, they've got quite a lot of members who are really interested in trying to deliver sustainable change and sort of really, really driving the program forward. So they're kind of systematically looking at all of the aspects of their delivery of service and seeing how they can create a more sustainable way of delivering that service, whether that is to try and get people in and out a bit quicker, or whether it's try and use less of a product, or to try and eliminate products altogether. But they're really systematically looking at how they can do that. I sort of mentioned earlier on that I play a really small part, but what I wanted to say is that we've got a lot of staff across the organization who are like unsung heroes. So these are people who are doing the sustainability role on top of their normal jobs, just really inspired by these people, because they're doing it just for the sort of love and pure desire to make a difference. So even though I've mentioned three examples there, I think it would probably be, it's probably unfair for me to only mention those three, because there's just so much good work that's happening across the organization.
It's like you said, there's already so much fantastic work going on. Alid, what about you? Can you give us an example of a project that has made a difference?
Yeah, I can think of a few, but one that sort of springs to mind really, and something that I'm involved with at the moment, is how we reduce the carbon footprint of the pharmaceutical products that we use. So the pharmaceutical industry globally, if you think of it as a global industry, it is. The UK is about 5% of that global market, and in here in Wales we're probably about 5% of the 5%. Yeah, that's sort of a huge area for us as far as our carbon footprint. So how do we reduce it, because it's something we can't directly control? So there's something called the Sustainable Markets Initiative, and as part of that there's a healthcare task force, and feeding into that task force, the Sustainable Health Coalition. So all of these things, I'd urge you to, even if it's just a quick type into Google, to see sort of what's going on. So through the Sustainable Healthcare Coalition, we as NHS Wales are working collaboratively with colleagues in NHS England, because quite often people talk about the NHS when we hear sort of podcasts that are further afield, and that, they actually mean NHS England. So I'm quite precious over the NHS here in Wales and the work that we do, and really trying to fly the flag of the things. For example, the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act that we have, it isn't in other parts of the UK, albeit maybe in House of Commons for a second reading in England, and in Scotland something that's at consultation stage, and we're asked a question quite often, oh, how are we aligning with other parts of the UK? And I do sometimes, not necessarily try and antagonize on purpose, but you know, get my elbows out and say, well, actually, how are the other parts of the UK aligning with what we're doing here in Wales? So it's about being an active participant in a lot of these conversations, not a passive participant. So through this work that we're doing with the Sustainable Healthcare Coalition, we're able to feed into that. And essentially what we're looking at doing is transitioning from a tier one methodology on how we calculate our carbon footprint, which is essentially spend based at the moment. We know that's got its flaws, but it's a good indicator for us to find out where our hotspots are. The transition to a tier two methodology, so rather than being spend, we look at supplier specific data. And transitioning to tier three, which is essentially a life cycle assessment of each product. So if we've got two products that are identical, how do we know the carbon footprint of a particular product? And we want to make a conscious decision that we purchase the product that's got the lower carbon footprint. So within the pharmaceutical industry at the moment, you think of all the drugs that are out there and the medicines that are available. If we've got one supplier saying the carbon footprint is X and another saying it's Y, well, how do we know? So through eight of the big pharmaceutical companies globally at the moment, they're working with BSI, so we're looking at standardizing the methodology to calculate the carbon footprint of medicines. So looking at the carbon footprint, the life cycle analysis of each of our medicines that we buy into the NHS. So by standardizing that and getting eight of the big pharma to agree on that, we can make more informed decisions on the things that we buy, resulting us in hopefully reducing our carbon footprint even more. But also it brings into account when we look at modern slavery and ethical supply chains as well. So it's a really complex landscape, and it's a big project to be involved with. But you know, we've got a seat at the table in that, and we are voicing our opinion of what we're trying to do, and trying to tie that back to, as I said, the Wellbeing and Future Generations Act. You know, that's our lens essentially on the United Nations SDGs. So that's one project, and then there are lots of projects, as Callum mentioned, probably too many to mention, but I think it's worth saying that the work that's going on in Cardiff and Vale is happening across all health boards and trusts pan Wales. So working in shared services, we've got that sort of helicopter view of what's happening in other parts of Wales. There's a lot of good work that's going on that needs to be recognised as well. But I think that's probably one of the biggest projects that I'm involved with. But there's so many others that I could mention as well.
Thank you. And this is where I find it difficult to keep to time, because I just want to keep on talking and hearing about all of these things. But we are starting to run out of time. So I want to ask you both, what one thing would you want everyone to know about sustainability? Aled, we'll come to you first.
Okay. One thing. That's a really tough question. I think recently having a conversation with somebody from Cynar Cymru, and I hope she doesn't mind me quoting her, if you know who she is, but we were talking about sustainability quite broadly. And when working in the field of sustainability, it's important to remember that no one's an expert in everything. No one's full of hope all of the time. No one can do it alone, and no one can forever feel inspired. So you might think that's sort of quite pessimistic, but I think to flip it on its head, together we can go much further than we can alone. So it's that collective, and I look at sustainability as being a team sport. So I think if we're working together and spreading that message, we can go a lot further than we can than just trying to work on our own.
Thank you. That's a really important message. And Callum, what would be your one thing that you would want everyone to know about sustainability?
So I had a really good think about this, because my first thought was that everyone can make a difference. And I realized that that's the answer that both Fiona and Stacey gave on your last podcast. So I thought I can't give that as an answer. So what I've done is I've come up with something it's probably similar, but it's pitched a little bit differently. So what we talk a lot about the need to create sustainable change and sustainable environments. But what I'd love people to start to think about when we're talking about sustainability is what if we don't? So, you know, what do we think the world's going to be like if we don't make the changes which are required? So it's kind of, I guess this is a bit more of like a call to action, really. So if we think about some things that were normal 50, 60 years ago, which we now think are just totally unacceptable from an environmental standpoint, but, you know, we all kind of create behaviors which are still impacting on our environment and on our population health. So I guess my takeaway is, it's something I Aled mentioned a little bit earlier on, but you know, I accept the change is hard, but I think that what everyone should do is just think about what the you of the future or the future generations are going to think about what we're doing now. And I think it would be good if everyone could sort of exude those sustainable behaviours, because at least we can sort of look back and think, well, at least I made a difference.
Thank you. And I like to end each episode with my guests talking about one hope that they have for the future. So Callum, your hope for the future.
My hope for the future is that this is taken seriously. I hope that we do start developing more robust policies around sustainability and the net zero agenda, and that we have systems in the future that are really fit for purpose, but also are low carbon.
Thank you. And Aled, what would be your one hope for the future?
I think, yeah, much like Callum, really, in that the work that we're doing now will pay dividend. I really hope it does. You know, I'm heavily invested in the field of sustainability, and I wouldn't be if I didn't think it could make a difference. So I think by maximizing what we're doing today in the field of sustainability, it gives a future and a fruitful future for those who are to follow us.
Thank you. And thank you both so much for giving up your time to join the podcast episode today. It's been so interesting to listen to you both. And I've learned so much more about decarbonisation and the work that's already going on and the work that is yet to happen. Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Climate Smart Conversations. And thank you again to our two guest speakers, Aled and Callum. If you enjoyed this episode, then please do look out for episode 3, which will be coming soon. Diolch yn fawr.